Hello, everyone. This is Michael Vandervoort, and this is Drive Through HR. We haven't done an episode in a while. I'm here with Robin, and I don't know if this is our very first show of the year or our second, but it's been a minute since we did a show. We've both been really swamped at work and haven't really talked to each other. So, Robin, how are you?
I am good, and no, we've done a couple actually together, but
It
it
feels
seems
like
like
it's been
it has been
forever.
a
So,
while. I am good. It is it's springtime here in Louisiana, and it's lovely out, and I am pumped.
yeah, we were in the 70s all weekend. Today here right now it's 47, so we had kind of a drop in temp today, and I came to work just wearing what this shirt. Like I went out at lunch, I was a little bit cold, but so still not spring. Spring is springing and leaves are out and stuff, flowers, but it's still chilly here, a little bit further north than you are. We're going to do a show today that is about a very cool career opportunity that one of our friends had a chance to experience, and that friend is Marie Lebezu. Marie, welcome to Drive Through HR. How are you?
I am well. Good to see you and Robin again.
Likewise. When you drop in to listen to the show as listeners, you'll note that the episode will be entitled The Penguin Episode, and there's a strong reason for that title, because Marie, something besides Marie owns plushy penguins. So anyway, Marie, let's jump right into the discussion in the interest of time and fun. So you truly had a unique opportunity, but before we get into that, why don't you tell us about yourself and your HR career? We've had you on as a guest several times as part of the Evil HR Lady group. I'm not sure if you've done an individual show before.
I have not.
Yes.
I am currently the HR director for a company called LPS. I'm a 30-year almost HR veteran. Worked in several different industries, but had, as you said, a very unique opportunity present itself several months ago. And I'm excited to be able to share it with everyone.
Yeah, because we all got to follow along vicariously through the Evil HR Lady back channel and through Facebook and some stuff. So the to get straight to the career opportunity that was so unique, Marie had a chance to go and work for a couple of months in Antarctica, which is a place most people never get to regardless, and certainly not many get to work. And so we're gonna kind of talk to Marie about her experience and how that went. There are some things that she is unable to discuss because of confidentiality and NDA requirements that she signed as part of the job. And we sort of understand what those are, but if we brush up against one and Marie declines, we just wanted to kind of put a disclaimer up front. And I know you wanted to add something too. So why don't you start out, Marie, with that, and then tell us a bit more about the experience and how, like, what it entailed at the high level, and then we'll drill down.
Sounds like a plan. I do want to start by saying that I am not authorized to speak on behalf of the National Science Foundation, the United States Antarctic Program, or the company that I was working for at the time I worked in Antarctica. All views that I am presenting today are my own opinions and nobody else's. That being said, I got to say it was great working with the U.S. Antarctic Program and the National Science Foundation. Both of those entities were amazing to work for. A lot of people ask me, the first question is, how the heck did you get this job? And my sister-in-law actually works for the company that I worked through to get the position. They had posted it on their intranet. And Heather, my sister-in-law, is, gee, you guys really need to reach out to my sister-in-law, Marie. And then, as they say, the rest is history. I went through the interview process and was offered the position. As Michael knows, because he got to, as he said, live vicariously through it, it's a rather involved process to get down there. Not only are there very extensive background checks, but there's also a very rigorous physical background that you have to go through. And as Michael knows, it took me pretty close to 60 days to get through that process. It's very, and it has to be. One thing that is fairly common knowledge is it's very limited medical facilities in Antarctica. There is a small hospital down there at McMurdo, where I was at. I was stationed at McMurdo Station. However, if it's anything too complicated, you do have to be evac'd off the ice to one of the stateside or another country that has better medical facilities. So once you pass what they call, it's called physical qualification, then the clock starts going, and it went fast. I cleared my physical requirement on Monday, and I was on an airplane on Saturday, the following Wow. Saturday, heading to Christchurch, New Zealand, where the Antarctic program has a large, I'm going to call it facility. And that's one of the jump off places. It took about 18 hours to get down there. New Zealand is beautiful, and it was spring down there. So there were flowers and everything else. And this was the first part of December. In Michigan, when I left, it was 30 some degrees. So, okay. So I was in New Zealand for a few days, and then it became time. It was time for us to go to Antarctica proper. You go through the customs just like you would for any other country. And then you hop on a C-130 military aircraft. If you've never been on a C-130, I can tell you it's not the most comfortable ride. you're basically sitting on a canvas sling. The trip takes anywhere from 8 to 9 hours to get from Christchurch to McMurdo, actually one of the airfields down there, Willis or Phoenix. And the facilities for, let's say, personal needs was a Home Depot bucket with a lid. So that was an interesting experience. But once you get down there, I landed on the field, and it was the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life. Just the majestic mountains, all the ice, it was blinding. And mm-hmm. I have a strong background in the history of Antarctic exploration. So I kind of knew what I was in for to see what it was going to look like, but the words could never describe how beautiful it was. So now that you're down there, you have your luggage and you're schlepping it yourself for the most part. You hop on what they call Ivan the Terrabus. We all get on it, and they dropped some people off at Scott Base, which was close by. That's run by the country of New Zealand. And then we hit McMurdo. And once you get to McMurdo, you have to wait for your luggage to arrive and be offloaded. And you end up in your room. Now, the dorm rooms down there, I'm in human resources. And the only other person that could feasibly put in there with me in a room would be another human resources personnel. And there's only one other HR person on the base from another company. So I got a single room. That is unusual because most people have anywhere from 2 to 3 roommates. It's definitely a shared space. Some people have said that McMurdo is very much like a mining town, and I feel that's a very accurate description. Hmm. It's very industrial down there. The dorms reminded me of my college dorm back in the 1980s. you think that you don't have any amenities, but we had hot showers, running water, the whole nine yards. There's something they call a galley. We would call it a cafeteria. It's just, it's a legacy because McMurdo was established by the United States Navy in the 1950s. So that's where you eat. There's a lot of great recreational activities. So that's kind of a broad overview of how you get down there and what you expect in the first, we'll say first 12 hours that you're down there.
Do you go through customs in Antarctica or just in New Zealand?
Just in New Zealand. Antarctica does not have customs.
Robin has dropped off apparently. She'll come back. Looks like she accidentally hung up. Sorry about that interruption. So tell us, I guess, well, so first of all, the Home Depot bucket, I can't help but go like, because I saw the netting or the webbing of your seat, and that there were, I know there were other people on the plane with you. Like, is there a curtain?
Yes, there is a curtain.
Have sort of a shower curtain and a bucket.
Basically.
Interesting.
It's a shower curtain. And yes, crazy. You did see the webbing pictures. That's what we were sitting on. Just basically, it's like sitting on a canvas cot.
Yeah.
If you've ever had that experience.
Yeah. I had a rope swing chair. So that's what I kind of envisioned in my head that it feels like, which was comfortable, but not, but on a C-130, I'm sure you're bouncing and stuff. So anyway, so you arrive in Antarctica, or as we like to call the land of penguins and ice, as we were talking about it on Evil HR Lady. And you're one of two HR people. How many other people at McMurdo, like what's the size of the station, that sort of stuff? Like how many people were you supporting? And what was your work day like?
Okay. I can say the peak number of people that were at McMurdo at any given time when I was down there was about 750 people. The numbers fluctuate quite a bit as people go to the other sites. They may go to South Pole. They may go to some of the research sites that are off of McMurdo. People are constantly coming in and out. So there were two of us, as you mentioned, and a lot of our job was basically just regular HR support services. We were answering paycheck questions. We were answering benefits questions. We were coaching and mentoring managers when they ran into issues. A lot of the normal things that you would do in HR, it wasn't that much different. So what a day would look like, though, to answer your question, is I get up and I would commute to my office, which was basically about two city blocks walking. Gorgeous view. I got to see the Chapel of the Snows, which is the southernmost house of worship in the world. And it was framed as you walk down the street against Mount Erebus or Mount Erebus, which is a active volcano, which was kind of cool. And my office was in the same building as the cafeteria or the galley. So I would, go and have my breakfast and then grab a cup of tea because I'm a big tea drinker and go back to my office and do HR stuff. I mean, it wasn't as different, the OHR in our Antarctica, it's got to be so much different. It really wasn't. It's a lot of the same types of HR issues you have anywhere else. Performance management, again, coaching and mentoring, those kinds of things.
Your work schedule was a bit different, I think.
Yes, it was a 6-day work week. We worked minimum 10-hour days. Sundays was our day off. They do celebrate holidays down there. We did have Christmas off. We did have New Year's off. So, and that was kind of a treat because it was a 2-day weekend. But most of the time, you're working a 6-day work week.
So you're truly like a full-time intern living in a dorm. and working ungodly hours
Robin, I remember seeing some of your updates where you would go and hop into the cafeteria and decorate some cookies or something, because you did a lot of different things with other teams.
Part of that is because a lot of things don't happen at McMurdo without volunteers. And around Christmas time, they had the kitchen team, who are wonderful, and nothing but kudos to the galley staff down there, because they really got it done, considering sometimes the variety wasn't as much as they would have liked. But we were down there decorating Christmas cookies. I was dipping truffles at one point. Just different activities just to help support the galley team so that they could put on, and I'm going to tell you, an amazing Christmas dinner and an amazing New Year's dinner. That group is a wonderful group of people, and I can't say enough about them.
So food is, is often even though, no one wants pizza anymore, food is often a motivator or sort of a reward at, in average US workplace, right? And down there, food situation is a lot different. You shared a couple stories, one about that they have to like heat the freezers to keep the food from getting, and others about like what a premium green vegetables and the way alcohol, tell us some of those stories or the examples.
Well, they do have to heat the storage warehouses because it's such a deep freeze down there that, if they didn't somewhat keep them at a reasonable temperature, it can get down below 50 degrees below zero Fahrenheit down there.
Wow.
Yeah. And South Pole gets even colder. I didn't get down to the pole. But those are the kinds of challenges they have. Another challenge they have, as Michael just mentioned, is what we call freshies. We had a lot of vegetables, a lot of fruit, but most of it was frozen and canned. It was really very difficult to get fresh vegetables. I remember we got a shipment of bananas in that had come in from on one of the military transports, and they had been exposed to the cold so that their skins had turned completely black, but the bananas themselves were fine. And people just went crazy over them. And I can't say I blame them. because I'm, in relatively good health. I wouldn't have made it down there if I wasn't. But I definitely could tell getting towards the end of my stay down there, the lack of fresh vegetables, even though we were having the fruits, the canned fruits, canned veg, frozen fruits, frozen veg. And some of my other people that I was down there with also agree that they definitely felt a change in their bodies and some in their cognitive abilities because they just weren't getting fresh vitamins that they needed.
What was the, speaking of, let's have a pizza party at work, kind of that concept. The other thing that we often do in mainland HR, let's call it, is, let's do some sort of activity with our coworkers. Well, the only people you're around are your coworkers.
Pretty
so
much.
What sort of, how did, what always fascinates me is, building that camaraderie, but you're working together with these people 6 days a week, and they're the only other people you see, but you want to have those good relationships and that camaraderie. But then what about people that need some away time, need some solitude?
There were activities for them as well. They had at least a couple of nights a week, they would have lectures in the McCurry lab for science lectures. There was also a coffee house down there, which sometimes had live music. They did role playing and board games, that kind of thing. There's actually two bars at McMurdo. They are BYOB. They do not sell alcohol. But that's another place where people can get together with other people that they don't necessarily see all day.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people would have their meals in the galley with people that they didn't necessarily see all day. There's a lot of core groups, just like in high school and college that meet with your people. But one of the interesting things down there is that they have a point system for alcohol. And you get 3 points a week unless you're on some kind of, we'll say, disciplinary thing that you're not allowed to buy alcohol. And a six pack of beer would be 1 point plus the cost to purchase it in the store. A bottle of wine was usually 1 point plus the cost to purchase it. And then harder liquors, depending on their alcohol content, were anywhere from 2 to 3 points plus the cost. And, honestly, they had to, add the shipping and everything else. So it was a little bit pricey to buy alcohol down there, but it was available if you were over 21. And we did have people down there. And this I was really interesting to see for me. We had some people that had literally graduated from high school in like May or June. And they come down in October to work.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
You have to be 18.
So one question, I know they're doing scientific research of various kinds, but so why are there 750 people? Plus there's these additional bases that are run by other countries. Why are there so many people in Antarctica? And what's the purpose besides just
besides pure research? Support services. Let's be honest. There's Air National Guard members down there that are helping with the transports, those kinds of things. They have to have all of their aircraft support, all of their stuff to making sure the flights are coming in properly, that kind of thing. There's support services. You have to have a full janitorial staff. You have to have a full kitchen staff. You have staff down there that does nothing but work the water and sewage station. Other ones work the HVAC and electrical stations, those kinds of things. So when you put all those pieces together, there's people that literally all they do is coordinate people coming off and on the ice. That's all they do all day. So it's most of it's a lot of it, a good chunk of it's support staff, and people like me, HR people. But there's also other things going on down there. The base is being, in certain areas, rebuilt. They're building new facilities down there. They're modernizing things. So there's also construction teams down there.
Yeah.
And it's just coming up. It's becoming Antarctic fall right now. They finally had their first sundown about 2 or 3 weeks ago because they hadn't the entire time I was down there. It was 24 hours a day long, which made for some interesting 2 a.m. bathroom runs when you're walking down the hall and feels bright.
I would be so confused.
It really messes with your sleep patterns. And
are the bathrooms communal as well?
Yes, just like in college. It's communal bathrooms with single shower stalls, at least in the one I was in. in the dorm I
was in. So how difficult was it for you to adjust to all that?
It was a little less challenging, I think, because I was in a single room and it also had the college dorm experience. I think for somebody who may have never been in that kind of environment, it might have been a little more difficult for them, especially if they get stuck in a room with two or three people they've never met before. So a lot of it, I guess, is just your life experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. So go ahead, Robin.
Oh, I wanted to go back to sort of the HR responsibilities proper. Did you have to do payroll, or was that someone else?
I had to do my own payroll.
You had to do your own payroll.
I had to do a time card while I was down there.
So okay.
Billing things.
But your job did not include processing payroll for employees. Thank God.
Nope. That was processed by the corporate company I worked for.
Okay.
Each company, because there's quite a few companies down there.
Yeah.
There is up to over 75 different contractors in.
Wow.
At any given time. And wow. Some of those might have 100 people. Some of them might have one or two people.
Huh.
And each of those organizations handles the payroll for their own companies.
And from a labor law perspective, what governs Antarctica?
Well, there is
in terms of federal, state, whatever.
Right. There is no one country that governs Antarctica. It's governed by international treaty. The original signatories, I believe, there were 12 or 13, including the United States. As best as I could tell, and I'm just dealing, because I was dealing mostly with Americans, that it's the labor laws of the country in which that your corporate headquarters and where you're receiving control and direction, because everything I dealt with was U.S. labor law.
Yeah.
Now, that might be different for, because we had some people from New Zealand, might have been different for them.
Yeah.
I can only speak from my own experience.
Yeah.
You also had a chance to see some historical explorers and such, right? Tell us
about
that. I know I'm Robin's interested in the HR stuff. I'm interested in all the surrounding shiny objects. So
Michael knows me well enough to know that I have a master's degree in history anyway, in addition to being a long-term HR pro. And one of the really cool things that is right there at McMurdo, I could literally see it from my dorm room, was the Scott Expedition Hut from the Scott Expedition of 1910 to 1912, when Robert Falcon Scott and his team tried to reach the South Pole. Unfortunately, his team did not survive the journey back. The Norwegian team, led by Roland Amundsen, made it there and back. So they were the first ones to be at the pole. However, one of the legacy pieces is that there is a hut, and it's out on Hut Point. And it was used not only by the Scott Expedition, but it was also used by one of Shackleton's expeditions, the Ross Ice Party, or Ross Sea Party, right around 1914, 1915, right around that time period. I don't remember the exact dates off the top of my head. And it has been fairly restored. When the U.S. Antarctic people in for Operation Deep Freeze back in the 1950s came down there, that hut had not been touched in over 40 years. So they went out there and, people being people, they decided to do some souvenir hunting. Well, a few years back, I believe somewhere around 2008, they decided they really should probably get start to doing some restoration on this hut. And they put a word out, for anybody who might have souvenirs from that hut, if they could return it, that would be extremely helpful. And a lot of people did. So there's a lot of things in that hut now that are original to it. One of the things is when you walk into the hut, immediately to your right is this, it's a kind of a dish kind of thing made out of wood with the thing underneath it. And it's nothing but ancient seal parts. They're over 100 years old.
Wow.
From that last expedition. And it's everything you can imagine. It's blood, it's guts, and everything else. And historical goo is what we termed it. And the smell was unique. But it really was cool. The whale stove or whale blubber or seal blubber stove was still there.
Wow.
A lot of the cans, pots and pans, some of the clothing is still there. And if you're a history nerd like me, I have some geeking going on. It's now governed by the
country of New Zealand is in charge of the hut now, and they only allow 2,000 visitors in the hut per year, simply because they're trying to preserve it. It's about 95% original. They did have to replace some of the floorboards because they had deteriorated over the century that it's been down there. So I was very fortunate to be able to do that. Now, that being said, keep in mind, McMurdo is not open to tourism. You know, you're not going to be on one of these Antarctic cruises and be able to stop at McMurdo.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different. It was kind of funny. I had a friend who was actually on one of those tours while I was at McMurdo and comparing notes. The only visitors they get are occasional dignitaries from the United States or other countries. They'll get brass from the military, occasionally somebody from Congress, those kinds of people.
Yeah.
So other than people that are actually working down there, you're not going to have the tourist scene.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. That's you also, the general consensus is wow.
Yeah. You also saw some of the local fauna, I guess.
Yes. Our friends, the penguins. The big joke was that, you know, those were my coworkers. The penguins are quite a thing. The seals come in a lot earlier, and they were out by Scott Point. We could not really go out on the sea ice because it was starting to deteriorate because it was going into summertime and it wasn't safe. But you'd see them out there laying out in the sun, and occasionally it looked like they were waving at you. And then towards the beginning of January, middle of January, all of a sudden the penguins invaded. And they are as cool as you'd see them on the nature specials. They are extremely loud, and they do smell bad. They are also protected, as well as the seals, by international treaties, so you can't get too close to them, and you definitely should not be touching them. But they are rock stars down there and among all my friends, because it was a lot of fun.
Got any question, Robin?
No, I'm just thinking about it, and I would think that, you know, 99.9, if not 100% of the people down there are the type of people that will abide by that treaty and not.
Yeah, sure. You're not wrong.
Yeah.
people were very good about it because you can be asked to leave the ice. One of the biggest thing of all the Antarctic treaties is protection of the environment and the wildlife down there.
Yeah.
And that's all of our goals. One of the interesting things that I found that I didn't think about until I got down there is you got 750 people, and you got 750 people creating garbage and wastewater.
Yeah.
There is a wastewater treatment plant down there, which takes care of that kind of thing. But all the garbage on Antarctica, including stuff that can't be recycled, like food waste, is packed up and shipped back to the United States once a year because you can't leave it on the ground.
Right.
And it does create some other issues, too. If you're going off, think about it as a gal, you know, you're going to go out, you know, to one of the other locations and you got to pee. You can't just, even the guys, you can't just take care of it wherever. So
yeah.
they provide, like, for hikers, those whizzy things and those kinds of things. Those are provided free of charge for people to use out in the field. But these are things you don't necessarily think about.
No. Yeah.
You had to bring warm clothing, because that you provide your own stuff, right? They may have given you an allowance. I don't recall. Yeah. But you're rather limited in what you can bring with you for what was a fairly long duration. Like, and it was like a roller bag and a carry-on or something. It was like you were going away for the weekend is how I...
For the most part, you're allowed up to 85 pounds of luggage, but since you're schlepping it around yourself, you try to limit as much as you can because you're the one going to be carrying it. You also are issued gear through the Antarctic program, boots, a parka, baklava, gloves, those kinds of things that we are required to use. But it was very interesting to figure out how much to bring, what not to bring, because there are certain things you can't bring in through New Zealand. New Zealand has some very strict customs immigration laws. And then once you get relieved to Antarctica, you can bring, like, you know, certain things on the flight to Antarctica that you get in New Zealand, you can't necessarily purchase there. And the old timers that have been there before and have deployed before, they knew that. So they had snacks with them. They had maybe a favorite kind of alcohol, that kind of thing they brought with them. But I tried to bring about 5 changes of clothes, and that was even a bit much. Hmm. I spent most of the time down there because it was spring down there, going into summer. It was warmer in Antarctica than it was up in Michigan, where I currently live.
Yeah.
It was 30 degrees in Antarctica, and it was -7 in Michigan. I usually, my office was heated. I had a pretty typical office, and I wore mainly a puffy coat with a stocking cap and gloves most of the time. Hmm. I wore hiking boots. And I was comfortable 99% of the time. Mm-hmm. There's always wind down there, though. So that's another thing. You get the wind chill factor going on. Mm-hmm. At one point, we were having gusts up to 50 miles an hour with sideways snow. And so that was like, oh, I'm back in Illinois, because Illinois gets that sideways snow.
Right.
Robin remembers that from her young days in Wisconsin.
That's right. I do. And the 85 pounds of luggage, I think I know people that pack more than that to go to like a 3-day SHRM conference, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Some people pack more shoes than that to go to a 3-day SHRM conference. So that's crazy.
Right. So you have to bring your laptop, those kinds of things, because it's actually a fairly modern setup there for offices. As Michael knows, we have internet down there. So I was able to stay in contact with everybody in addition to my normal work. On Christmas Day, I was able to do a Zoom call with my family. But it's all satellite-based down there.
Mm-hmm.
So there are certain times a day that the internet may go out, depending on where the satellites are located. Satellite phones do work. Satellite-enabled cell phones do work sometimes. I actually had to carry a pager 24/7 so that I could be contacted in case there was an emergency. But we had full internet. We could use Zoom. We could use Teams. We got emails. We even had landlines that were hooked up to the satellite system. So that you could actually, an old fashioned telephone. It was the wildest thing.
Wow.
But we were connected with the outside world. Thanks to the
At the shops and the liquor store and what is it cashless or
McMurdo is there's one shop, it's one store, and it's cash only now. Scott Bass's store, because we did get the opportunity, they allow you to go over there once and visit, and that's actually cashless, but it's through New Zealand, so it's a whole different program. So why one's one way and one's the other?
I was envisioning, like a company store where you just, sign a chit, right? I mean, like, not necessarily like, the wild, in the wild, wild west, but when you said cash only, I was like, really, who would want to bring a big wad of cash to Antarctica? And how do you know how much to bring? And where do you hide it?
That was something I was told when I went down there. They made a recommendation to bring a certain dollar amount of cash, including ones.
Huh.
Something that most people, they share. I had another HR person who was down there as I was getting ready to deploy down there. So I'm going, hey, other person, what do you recommend? What should I do?
Yeah.
Kinds of things. And besides alcohol, it had some snacks. It had like chips and stuff like that. You never know what you're going to see in there. They also had basic, we'll say, amenities like shampoo, toothpaste, but like one brand only. And then they had McMurdo swag, t-shirts,
Coke.
So those were available.
Did they provide if you did bring any sort of valuables like cash or medication or things that you might not want, did you have like a secure area? I know you were in a room by yourself, but did everybody have like a lockbox or something? Or
not that I'm aware of.
Interesting.
I think it's just you had to trust your roommates. And most people do, because it is such a small world. There's 1 or 2 degrees of separation max while you're down.
Yeah. Interesting.
It is interesting because you live, eat, work, recreate, everything within about a mile and a half square.
Yeah.
What was the, beyond the Scott Shack and all that kind of historical stuff, obviously, what was the coolest thing that you saw?
Oh gosh, there's so many cool things. One thing, it seems like every building other than like the dormitory buildings had certain historical artifacts from the history of the base. The cafeteria or the galley had these cases with these instruments. Some of them were surveying instruments. Some of them were astronomical instruments that were from like the 50s and 60s. McCrary Labs had some really cool stuffed emperor penguins. So there was a little bit of everything. It just, the place is so infused with history. So pretty much anywhere you look, they are using equipment down there, you know, that's been restored. It's great stuff. You know, the program's done a lot of hard work with keeping things up and running the best they can. And, you know, kudos again, not speaking on behalf of the program, but just my own personal observation, that it was a lot of good stuff. And there's outdoor activities as well. If you're, you know, one of those physically fit people, you can go up and walk up hot, I can't even talk, up Observation Hill, which is quite the cardio. They run a marathon there every year in January. You could walk out to Hut Point. You can go out and see, she's called Roll Cage Mary. It's a statue of the Virgin Mary with an arch over the top of it. It did have stones on it at one time, but the weather has beaten it down. So it's just got this, what looks like a roll cage. You can walk up and see her. Something really cool they have on New Year's Day every year is something called Ice Stock. And Ice Stock is where local bands, local talent from the base get together and do sets. And it goes on for a good chunk of the day. There was a big chili cook-off. I got to judge that. So that was great fun. You know, HR is neutral. So we judge the killer chili cook-off. And it's a lot of fun. And people can, you know, let their hair down, blow off some steam. Surprised that, you know, there were no complaints of any issues during Ice Stock, which was great considering, you know, people were out blowing off steam. So, yeah, you know, very, you know, was happy about that because, you know, alcohol plus music plus crowds can equal bad behavior. There wasn't any, and that was great.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things to do down there. I volunteered in the craft room, which was also in the same building as my office. So that was kind of cool. They had celebrations. They have religious services. There was church every Sunday. Every Friday night, they had a, it wasn't really a service, but we had, I'm Jewish, and we had basically a meetup for the Jewish people on base, you know, where we could talk and, you know, and share ideas and that kind of thing. The Chapel of the Snows actually has an area for people who observe the Islam or Muslim faith, that kind of thing. There's kneelers for, you know, people who do Catholicism. So it's really, it's a very wonderfully inclusive place. They are very accepting that I saw of the LGBTQ plus community down there as well, which was great. They had a big Pride Day down there. And it was just, it reminded me a lot of the atmosphere of most college campuses, really. Although the age group, you went from 18 to, well, there were people, I'm 57, and there were a few people that were older than I am. So wide spectrum of ages, wide spectrum of professions. There were machinists down there, executive chef, HVAC people, truck drivers, construction workers. There's pretty much almost anything you can imagine down there besides scientists.
That's really cool. So one last question for me. Your husband is an archaeologist and you're a history buff, and he's gone off and done digs. So this isn't the first time that you guys have had sort of an adventure, but this is like a big deal to embrace doing something like this. How did you guys manage that? And because you have a, I mean, anyway, you know your own backstory.
I know where you're going with this. I am married to an archaeologist. Zoo is an archaeologist. He did a lot of digs, and it taught me, even though I'm very independent to start with, but it also made sure that I did have that inner independence and strength. I can, you know, change the batteries on the lawnmower, that kind of thing. I've never been afraid to try something new. I was more worried about him, quite frankly, when I was gone, because he doesn't cook. So, but my mother-in-law lives quite close by. So it just, it was, we were flipping the narrative. The narrative had been for so many years that Zoo goes off to these exotic places like Israel and all these other fun places. And Marie stays home with the dogs and the cats. This time Zoo stayed home with the dog and the cats, and Marie got to go off somewhere fun. And it really, it worked because we're used to it. And it was just me being gone this time. And with the wonders of the internet and satellites, we talked every day. We would talk, you know, through Facebook Messenger. We would, you know, send emails back and forth about important things, those kinds of matters. You know, of course, I made sure, like he did for me previously, that he had power of attorney in case something happened, those kinds of things. And these are the things you definitely need to think about, because you, if the satellites go out, you may not be able to get a hold of somebody for a few hours. And it could be a critical situation. So those kinds of things you have to prep for. It's not like a vacation where you're gone for 2 weeks and, you know, this is more extended. I knew people that went down there in October and are just now coming back. So, you know, some people are down there for 6 months. The thing is that there are limits depending on the positions. I'm not exactly sure how it's determined, but you can't stay down there for more than about a year until you have to redeploy back stateside, just because they're worried about people's mental health. That's how that works.
Yeah. Interesting.
So, and, you know, and it's even more so, again, I did not get to the South Pole, but it's even more isolated down there. So those are the things they have to worry about, that people are in the best physical condition they can be, and that they have all the support and resources they need.
Does going to the pole involve, is there like a, is there a facility there, or is that just like a locate? Oh, okay. I wasn't sure about that. Yeah.
Yep. Scott Amundsen Station, or Amundsen Scott Station, is located at the South Pole, and it's a smaller version of McMurdo.
Gotcha.
It's a lot colder there. Even during the summer, the temperatures don't get much below above zero. And there's a lot fewer people down there. And once you're down there for the winter season, you're there. You're there. It's hard even to get anybody in and out of McMurdo during the winter season because the weather is so bad. So that's why they're so careful to make sure that people are in as good a physical condition as possible while they're down there, because there's a couple of great books out there. There was one that was a doctor, a female doctor, had gotten breast cancer, I believe it was.
Yeah,
and that you know, they had to airdrop chemotherapy supplies to her at the South Pole.
So sounds crazy.
Yeah, but it's just stuff you don't necessarily think about.
Yeah. Robin, you want to wrap us up?
Oh, I could talk about this forever. Marie, thank you so much for sharing this this fascinating story. As I told you when you went off on this adventure, I hope you took notes and you like a diary and you need to turn it into a book, because it's just fascinating. Tell our listeners how they can connect with you, how they can find you online.
Well, I'm available on Facebook. You can always find me on the Evil HR Lady Facebook group. I'm one of the moderators along with Michael, and I'm also available on LinkedIn.
And there are a bunch, and it's Marie Lubazo, and most have that in the show notes. And there are a bunch of people on Evil HR Lady Forum. I don't know the last time I counted. I think the last time anybody counted, we were around 30,000, but I don't know where we're at these days.
So, 31.5, I think.
31, oh, my 5. Goodness.
Yeah. It's huge, and it slowed down a little bit, but it's still very active group. So a lot of good stuff going on there. Thank you so much for doing this. And we've been wanting to get you on for a little while, but we haven't had time. And so I'm glad we were able to do this. Robin, did you post the Tracy show yet? Or is that still? Okay. Yes. So we have a show in line ahead of you. So this will probably go up a couple days, maybe next week.
Up today.
Yeah. So, or towards the end of the week, but we'll get the show out. We appreciate you doing this. And I'm going to say goodbye and let you guys say goodbye as well.
Goodbye.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to this. It was a unique adventure. And I encourage you that if you ever get a chance to take a chance like this for someone somewhere you've always wanted to go, I encourage you to do it.
Awesome. Thanks.